How possible is it to squeeze the funding for Islamic State? I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. French jets are attacking ISIS targets today in an attempt to disrupt supply lines and command and control after the attacks in Paris on Friday. But let's talk about ways that countries might interrupt funding for ISIS, ISIL, or Daesh, as it's sometimes called. Louise Shelley is the director of the Terrorism, Transnational Crime and Corruption Center and a professor at the School of Policy, Government, and International Affairs at George Mason University. We reached her in Rome. Dr. Shelley, where is the money coming from for ISIS? This movement, if you want to call it that?
The money comes from many different activities. ISIS is a diversified criminal business. And part of the money for ISIS comes from illicit trade. So in Iraq and Syria, it comes from oil trade. It comes from extortion. In Europe, funding for this activity comes from petty criminal activity that the supporters of ISIS are engaged in. In fact, the one identified terrorist in the French attacks had been convicted 8 times for participation in petty crime. He'd been convicted eight times by the French authorities previously.
Now, on the oil sales, we've done some reporting in the past on these small refining operations. They're trying to sell. Who would buy illicit oil?
Unfortunately, there are many buyers for illicit oil. There are buyers in Syria. There's oil that's smuggled through Turkey. In the past, it's been smuggled into Kurdish Iraq. People are willing to buy oil at cheaper prices.
ISIS has this social media campaign to attract international recruits. But once these recruits show up, they have to feed them, house them. This stuff requires, well, one would think, serious money.
It does require serious money. But when these foreign fighters come, they also do things to raise money. So they, in many cases, are required to have 3 or 4 months of financial support with them when they join ISIS. So sometimes they sell their passports. They raise money through engaging in small-scale crime in Europe, just as it seems that this one of the terrorists who killed himself had gone to Syria before, and he had had a history of criminal activity. So some of this comes out of money that's generated outside the region that helps fund these foreign fighters. They get some salary, but they're paid below market value because of their commitment to the ideology. So they're getting them on the cheap.
French authorities are drawing a line from the terrible attacks on Friday to possibly planning that happened across the border in Belgium. Now, Belgium comes up in your book, Professor, Dirty Entanglements.
Yes, it does. In fact, I wrote about a community in Belgium in my book that was a meeting place of crime and terrorism. I described there how at one police raid that was conducted in this neighborhood, they found a model of the London subways before the attack on the London subways occurred. So this is an area that has been a hot spot for the meeting of crime and terrorism since at least the mid-2000s.
George Mason's Louise Shelley is director of the Terrorism, Transnational Crime and Corruption Center. We reached her in the Italian capital today. Dr. Shelley, thank you.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Financial markets are relatively stable on this Monday after the Paris attacks. The CAC 40 stock index on the Paris bourse is down slightly, but the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 were up in early trading. The NASDAQ Composite was flat. There's news that Marriott wants to buy rival Starwood for more than $12 billion in cash and stock. You may know the following already if you enrolled in the Starwood Club. Starwood is Sheraton, Westin, W Hotel, St. Regis, Aloft, and more. Investors aren't loving this, at least this morning. Marriott stock was down about 3%. Starwood stock was down 6% in early trading. The offer for Starwood was quite a bit less than the stock price on Friday, a take under rather than a takeover, some call it. New Coke, long gone, but Coke Classic still spills out of convenience store fridges the world over. And it sometimes still comes in the classic contour bottle. You know the one I'm talking about. Slim, elegant curves, tapers toward the top, easy to hold. Yes, it's a bit of a love affair. American consumers and Coke. The bottle design that helped make this possible turns 100 today. The bottle was patented November 16, 1915, by a glassmaker in Terre Haute, Indiana. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman takes us back.
Now for a lively lift. Ice cold Coca-Cola. This individual size bottle has no more calories than half a grapefruit.
The actress in this 1961 ad swigs from the classic contour bottle. Coke helps her slim down, she says. Times have changed, but not design values, says British critic Stephen Bailey. He put on the first Coke exhibition at the Victoria and Albert Museum.
I grew up with Coke. I mean, for me, that was a taste of pleasure. Get access to Coke and you get access to that glorious American dream world.
The 1915 bottle was invented in a contest Coke put on for glassmakers.
It's a masterpiece of American vernacular design. Whimsical, intuitive, functionally it works. You can hold it in your hand very easily.
It also coincided with mass industrial production, says Barbara Floyd at the University of Toledo, one of the cities where the bottles were made.
Every bottle was exactly the same. Beverage companies, which were once locally owned and distributed, were able to become national companies.
Global commercial domination followed. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And from studios at Montclair State University in New Jersey today, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.